Do you roll with the intro first and then just
I don't know. Sometimes it? I feel weird about it. We usually do cold opens in the show, but sometimes we just get to talking and something funny happens and we just start it like that. I'll just say good evening or good night. This is Podcast and Chill, a podcast where we chill. Thanks for joining us. I could, you know, do something like that, but
yeah, when I start mine, I usually try to just have everybody record as soon as possible and then
figure it out later
and see what happens. Yeah.
Figure it out later. Well, so I like shows that do a little bit more of a high energy intro, but just not that kind of a personality. It's like,
yeah,
unless we're playing like Fort Minor in the background, I'm getting a bit pumped here. But all right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our newest episode of Podcast and Chill, a podcast where we chill. Weston Blazy here, joined for the first time ever by, I like to affectionately call him my baby brother, even though he's, I think, just a year and a half younger than me. And we both do collectively have a younger brother together. Gage Blazy, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's good to be here. I'm excited for this.
Because you don't usually do movie stuff on your podcast, right? I mean, not that I know of.
Well, the podcast is in limbo right now, so we don't really talk about movies too often. We talk more about just random-ass topics.
Well, there's no scenario where we weren't going to do Black Panther stuff because this movie has basically taken over the entire world. Like it's become a topic of conversation where if you haven't seen the movie, you're kind of a loser at this point. I mean, that's sort of like where it's gotten. Like we're in near Star Warsian level of like cultural moments. Like this is like what Get Out felt like last year, isn't it?
A movie that I still have not seen, but yeah, I mean, this is. It's as big as it gets right now.
All
right,
so Black Panther. I'm just gonna run through some money stuff first, and I would like to point out first that you like to take credit. I watch all these Marvel movies and I love them just like, you know, the next person. It's mainstream now to like these movies.
Oh yeah.
But you like to take credit for me jumping into Marvel and comic movies, correct? You like to take credit for that?
That's all me.
Do you also take credit for introducing me to Star Wars or pizza or any normal other thing that people do?
No, absolutely not. But the thing is with Marvel, I mean, it's just something that I've liked since, I mean, goes early years of high school. So it's not really something that was too cool to like in high school, but now it's becoming way more mainstream and it's catching on.
Well, when we were in high school, what movies were out though? We just saw It was like the Amazing Spider-Man, and like that was out.
Well, I think it was my sophomore year, but like the first Avengers came out, and I remember going to see that and staying to the post-credit scene and being hyped as hell for Thanos' appearance in the next Infinity War movie or something.
Why have we been teased with Thanos so many times? Is he that destructive of a villain?
Well,
he's the carrot. I mean, he's just getting dangled in front of us after, it seems like, every other movie.
Yeah, listen, well, I don't know too much about the actual comics of it all, but I know a lot about the movies. Speak for those, but it seems like they kind of didn't really know exactly what they were doing in the beginning. so they said, why not? Let's just tell everybody where we want to go.
Wait, are you telling me that Marvel didn't know that these were going to be basically Star Wars movies going forward? I mean, that's sort of like the accidental success of what we're dealing with. So right now, recording February 26th, I'm looking at just some raw numbers here for Black Panther. Over 250 domestic box office. That's not the most updated, but it's over 250 domestic. So I want to ask you, I remember we had this conversation about Marvel movies, I think about a year ago, and you had told me that Marvel is in such a sweet spot right now because of all of this money that they're making off movies like Guardians of the Galaxy. Like these B and C list, I don't even know if you want to call them superheroes, just like these comic names.
And well, actually, I mean, the guys in the beginning who started it off were still like B and C list characters. Like the main guys are like the Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, the X-Men. And those were all, they sold off all those rights. So they started off with these characters. But yeah, I know what you're saying though.
So, right. So these, I don't even want to call them C-list then. Let's call them D and E and F-list superheroes. But like those Guardians of the Galaxy movies, like they were making big bucks. And you had said that, sure, like, you know, they were expecting them to do well, but they sort of took on a different sort of tone in the movie industry, and like they made a ton of money, and everybody loved them. Like, it was almost like Marvel was surprised that it happened like that. Like, do you think for a movie like this that a lot of people don't know that much about Black Panther? Like, I would imagine the comic books are now being bought a little bit more just because people are interested in the story. But like, yeah. I guess my question is, do you think Marvel was caught off guard by the success of this movie?
I don't think so. I mean, you look at who they brought on to direct the movie, Ryan Coogler. I think they knew exactly what they were getting into, and they wanted it to be this spectacular piece on its own. And I mean, some of the risks they took, and I guess before, were probably Guardians, and that was like the main one. But this, I think they fully expected it to be what it is today.
Okay. All right. Well, let's jump into the actual movie. So you want to do like overall stuff at the end?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So what did we like? What was good? Let's just start all positive. What was good? What did we like about it?
Well, for me, I guess probably the most compelling part was definitely those action scenes in the water. The fights in the water with and actually we're probably gonna struggle with the names here because I can't do these names. Yeah. So T'Challa is the main Black Panther.
Yes, the king.
So his first fight with I don't even know.
M'Baku.
M'Baku. M'Baku. Yeah. Like that fight, it was so, I guess, hand to hand, and it didn't look like there was much CGI to it, and it was pretty compelling to watch. And then his other one with Killmonger was also pretty compelling too. But I would say what made the first fight really cool was the fact that you just didn't know what was going to happen. Like, you didn't know that. Black Panther. Well, are we getting into spoilers too?
Yeah, I would say just spoilers are going to be throughout. I mean, if you're first of all, you probably have already seen this anyway. But if you haven't, first of all, go see it. And second of all, I think we're safe. Let's just run.
Yeah. So like the fact that Black Panther was able to beat M'Baku, the first fight was pretty cool. And the second fight was actually it was a little downer because you knew Black Panther was going to stay alive, even though he got thrown off the waterfall, but. The hand-to-hand style that was shot in was really, really cool.
Yeah, it was well done, and it had a little bit of a feel of like the Dark Knight, sort of when Batman and Bane were sort of like in this like swampy area in like the sewer where they were just going back and forth in the water, and like you could tell it the fight was real, but like there were real stakes behind the fight, and yeah, that was really impressive. I mean, the entire. You know, when they brought in that scene, all of the tribes, and, you know, they had to see, you know, who wanted to challenge T'Challa, and, like, that was really great. I had a little bit of beef, and this is, like, one of my very few beefs with the movie in general, is a little too much CGI for me.
Yeah.
So, like, when they're standing in the water like that, and they're looking up at all these tribes, and, you know, they had all these people, like, up on the rocks, and, like, there was, like, this big... layer of stone that like all these people were like dancing on and cheering and clapping and stuff. Like that looked really terrible.
I completely agree with you. I was actually, it's funny that you brought up the Nolan movies, the Nolan Batman movies, because it seemed like the parts that were real were really noticeable, but the parts that were fake were pretty, weren't too good. But like this could have used like a little, like almost a wide angle sort of Nolan-esque cinematography to it. Like imagine that water scene fight, but like with a wide angle lens and like everything more spread out, because like these tribes are supposed to be huge. So why are we getting this like compact sort of stone waterfall feature with all these CG characters? It just didn't really look too good.
Right. And it's not like they didn't have the funds. I mean, we could have, I don't know how much they had for a budget on this movie, but like it's a freaking Marvel movie. Like it's not like they didn't have the means to do something.
They probably paid Kendrick with it.
All right, well, what's good? The music. I mean, I feel like that's not a hot take or that's like something easy, but like, you know, Kendrick did a great job with the music. And a friend of mine who I watched the movie with halfway through the movie was like, he nudged me. He's like, you know, Kendrick did the soundtrack, right? I was like, yeah. He did all of it. He's like, man, I want some more Kendrick. And I looked at him, I was like, this whole thing is kind of like every sound, every instrumental, like the past probably two or three albums that Kendrick has done, the Untitled, To Pimp a Butterfly, and the latest Damn, like those imprints were all over the soundtrack for this movie. And just because there weren't lyrics per se does not mean that Kendrick didn't have, you know, a big influence on it. I know that There was like the one main song where they're going into the casino and like the Weekend song was playing, and like, you know, we can talk about that scene in a second too, but like the score overall, and I don't want to just say the songs were good, because the songs were good, but the score overall was it was really great. And like, there was a couple of, I guess, like cat-like inferences in some of the music where like there was like a couple of growl things that I thought just really worked.
Yeah, it seemed like each, I don't know about each person, but a lot of characters had an identity with each I guess they had like a certain signature to their song style that they played for each one. So like the Killmonger music was so identifiable, and then they also did one for the Dora Milaje, the bald-headed women,
yes,
who were the bodyguards. They had like, they incorporated some like African sort of, I guess, weird, like, I don't even know what you call it, but like clicking or beeping, whatever, or howling from the mouth. It was pretty cool.
And I think an important thing to note here is that, like, all right, first of all, like, we're not film critics, like, we don't know everything about film, but like the difference between a soundtrack and an overall score of a movie like this versus, I know, like, I hate to pick on again, but like Suicide Squad, when what is this, some kind of Suicide Squad, some kind of Black Panther, but like Suicide Squad, just because there are good songs in your soundtrack and you're just randomly placing them throughout the movie, like sure, just because you're gonna play Bohemian Rhapsody, like that's a great song, everybody loves that song, or like they had some Eminem song in there that I can't remember, but just because you're just randomly placing songs that we know and recognize does not mean that it's going to translate well to the movie. Like, this was such a polar opposite of that. I mean, it was an original soundtrack. It didn't seem random. It made sense. It flowed. And there wasn't just like a 2-minute, you know, outburst of songs. Like, it was like a little bit in piece, little bit in piece, little bit in piece as you're, you know, doing whatever. And, you know, they're showing you the world. And it worked. It made sense. And like, that's how a soundtrack and a score is supposed to be.
Yeah. There was that one little cheesy part with, Ulysses Claw, where he's in the car getting ready to do the chase scene, and he's like, I forget what he said, but he said something like, this isn't boring or something, and we need to put on some music or something like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yes,
that was really cool.
Yeah, and he was great. I mean
I loved him.
Yeah, he was great. The acting in this was I mean, again, not a film critics, but like basically everybody in here was pretty great. I mean, even some of the old stuff they did with Sterling K. Brown in Oakland, like that was really compelling stuff. Even Martin Freeman is like the only white guy, like that was kind of funny. Like, you know, he was pretty good in this. I don't want to mispronounce all of these, women's name here, Lupita and Dania, but like
Lupita was great. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, she was fantastic, and her and T'Challa's chemistry I thought was really fun. I'd like to maybe see a little bit more of that in the next one. I think we only got like a taste of it in the first, like, I don't know, 20 or 30 minutes or so. But I mean, and Forrest Whitaker as like, is he just going to be playing like these old sage characters in every movie now? Like, is that where he is in his career? I mean, he's great at it. He's great.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like a perfect role for him. I have no complaints about it, except he keeps playing the same person.
Yeah. But I mean, listen, he's getting this Disney money, so I'm not mad at it.
Yeah. What'd you think about Ulysses Claw, his CG hand? What'd you think about that?
I thought it was fine. It was a big deal, right? They made a big deal about it in the trailers and all that stuff coming up before it, right?
Yeah, I didn't mind it. Some people were pretty against it, but whatever. They thought it looked too rubbery.
Oh, jeez.
I think that was like kind of the point.
I mean, it was a freaking disposable hand that you could take off and morph into a weapon. Like, there's no basis for what it should look like, so it looked like whatever they wanted it to, because it doesn't exist. Yeah. All right, so while we're talking about Ulysses, I have a little bit of a beef. And listen, I'm nitpicking it. I don't know what you have thought about the movie as a whole, but we'll get to that later. But I really enjoyed it. So I'm nitpicking a little bit. But a little big of a story kind of hole for me is that with Ulysses, why did they, him and Michael B. Jordan, why did they need the axe? Like, I'm just going to pick your brain and ask you questions because you probably know a little bit more about this than I do. But like, why did they need that axe?
I mean, plot-wise, I guess they're because the Wakandans sort of knew where it was and knew where it was being held, and once they did that, it would sort of like trigger them to come after Ulysses Claw, I guess.
But why did they need to? Why did he even need to do that in the first place?
Well, I think it was mainly for money, because that's what Claw wanted, because that's just his thing.
Yeah, but his motives... Like, all right, sure, but Claw's motives are secondary in this, aren't they? I mean, Michael B. Jordan's motives are... He is the antagonist. We need to sort of figure out what he wants to do and why he wants to do it. So I didn't really understand as I was watching it, at the end, why didn't Michael B. Jordan, if he was going to kill Claw the entire time, why didn't he just kill him in the first place and bring him to the Wakandans like he did eventually? Why didn't
you're making me rethink the entire movie. I don't really know.
Yeah, like, I mean, he walks up to their doorstep and he gives Wakabi Claw in a bag. Yeah. And why didn't he do that 30 minutes before? If he was just going to kill him all along, I didn't quite understand that at all.
I guess maybe he needed to get close to Wakanda to know exactly where it was, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a nitpick, but it's...
It is a nitpick. It is a nitpick.
Yeah.
What else did I want to bring? Oh, so yeah, Michael B. Jordan's overall motive, I guess. That was beef with me. I had another beef with the fight at the end. It seemed like it ended too fast. All right, actually, let me ask you, what did you think about the fight at the end, or just the overall battle scene?
It was like you got to that one part where they were both falling, and then once they got on that rail, it looked like two rubber creatures jumping at each other.
Yeah, a lot of CGI.
I thought Marvel was kind of like past this point where they can make really just intensive fighting scenes, but
yeah.
It seemed like they sort of just forgot that at the end. And then they had that people are calling it the Phantom Menace moment, where like their powers are disabled and they're just looking at each other. That was kind of interesting.
Well, the beef with that is, to me, you know, when the hero gets destroyed at some point in, like, you know, midway through the second act of normal movies, like he loses a battle at the midpoint of the movie and he comes back and he wins at the end. Like that's how movies go. So when T'Challa gets beaten by Michael B. Jordan, he is basically, they're on an even playing field. They both don't have Black Panther powers. Mm-hmm. They're on an even playing field, and he basically takes him down pretty easily, right? I mean, and he throws him in the water, and we don't see T'Challa for a little bit.
But we know he's alive.
We know he's alive, so, and that, you know, that's kind of annoying too. But my beef is that, why was he able to beat him the second time? So when a hero loses, they have to go through some sort of transformation or learn something or discover a new weapon or, you know, uncover new knowledge that allows them to win the battle that they lost before. They're better for it, you know? And he comes back in, and I don't know really what he learns in between that time. And I think they wanted it to be that moment where he talks to his father and he says, you know, I can't stay here with you. Or all this stuff, like, you were a bad father, you bad king, whatever. But it didn't seem like T'Challa had enough changing in between that moment and the moment where he faced off with Michael B. Jordan again to actually win the battle. Because, and I hate to, again, we're just comparing this to other superhero movies, but, like, in The Dark Knight Rises, you know, Batman gets destroyed, you know, the famous, like, oh, mind and body, like his, everything gets destroyed. So he has to learn the lesson that it's not about how strong he is, it's, you know, about how mentally stable he is, and about how he is actually going to be able to give up everything he has for his city, you know? And he has to learn that lesson in the jail. And I'm what did T'Challa learn to just beat Michael B. Jordan with a spear in, like, this really weird Tron dark room? Like, that's my beef.
Yeah, that's a point. I mean, the only part really that about changing him was that part where he visited his father in that astro, I don't even know what you call it, world.
Yeah.
Very
Lion King-y too. Very Lion King.
Say that again?
The whole world, I mean, I hate to just make the Africa comparison, but like very Lion King-like.
Oh yeah, there were definitely like hints of like
a ton of Lion King hints.
Lion King music-esque in there too.
But what were you saying?
But I don't really know. Like there was that part, and then there was maybe that part with M'Batu, how he's got all these other people with him, maybe. That think he's the rightful king, but there's no like gaining of knowledge or gaining of new abilities.
Right.
Maybe I guess changing his purpose would be probably part of it. I'm thinking like his father was wrong to do what he did, so I guess that gives him more strength, but that might be a stretch.
Well, you know what, speaking of when he was going to visit his father, that was my other CGI beef. was the snow. I don't know if that sort of like annoyed you at all, but when they were covering him at the end, it was, I mean, could you not get real snow or like something that looks normal? Like, did you have to have CGI snow? This movie probably took $200 million. Could you get normal? Like, it was so weird.
I forgot about that.
That bugged me. That bugged me a lot. Just unnecessary CGI. If you don't need it, don't use it. The Lion King thing, I just wanted to take a little bit more. I mean, the Lion King sort of like Africa feel about how he went into those worlds, that was really great. But also the sort of like overtone of like the battle for the kingship or however you want to call it. Like, you know, that's how it works in like, you know, a lion's pride. Like if you want the king, you have to beat him in this like one-on-one square off. And if you want, you know, access to all of the lioness, like that's how that works in the wild. So that was really cool too, to sort of bring that full circle.
Yep.
What else?
The politics of it all was actually a really interesting part, even though like it's a Marvel movie and there's supposed to be like action packed in this sort of grand thing. The politics of it all were pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to talk about my take that I think that you're going to have? So I'm just going to guess your take on this movie. So go, I'm going to be a little mean and I'm just going to go for it. Do you think this movie is like Wonder Woman at all?
Well, I mean, yeah, you know my answer here. This is...
I don't know your answer. I'm guessing your answer. You didn't tell me anything. We haven't, just for the record, we have not spoken about this movie, really, with each other since right now. So I'm looking forward to you just falling into the take that I think that you're going to have, but not in style, but in terms of, I guess, messaging or whatever. Like, what are some of the things that you think about this movie and Wonder Woman?
So... going into Wonder Woman and this movie, it's the same exact thing. You get all these outside factors that have nothing to do with the actual movie. They have to do with like who's making it, what it means to society, and all these other outside things. So with all that aside, you still have to look at what the movie is just by itself. And I still think it's a good movie, but I don't think it's near what people are saying, how it's this life-changing event and it just changes my whole perspective, or changes the genre of Marvel movies altogether. I don't think that. It's just a good movie.
Yeah, I always think that stuff gets like 20% blown out of the water a little bit. Like I think most of the people aren't on that bandwagon and think that this is the most insane movie of all time. I think it's just a different kind of movie, and it's okay to just be a different kind of movie. You know, there were a lot of unique things about this movie that weren't really similar to other movies. Like the world building in this is probably the best, or if not close to the best Marvel movie we've seen. I mean, what else would rival it in terms of world building? I mean, maybe Guardians, but I wouldn't even say Guardians.
Well, most of the Marvel movies live on planet Earth, so you got to look at the other ones. So you got to look at Thor, you got to look at Guardians, and those are pretty much it. Like everything, you don't really need world building for Ant-Man, or you don't need world building for Iron Man, besides the first one. So I mean, because this is this outside world and it's this private location that's just been so private for so long, I mean, they had to do a lot of world building, and it was actually, I did like a lot of that too.
Yeah, that was easily one of the best parts, was the sort of creation of this cool world, and you know how they had I forget what was the daughter's name, Shuri. She was great. She was hilarious. And but yeah, some of that cool technology stuff, like that was really compelling. And if you want to say that it's different from other Marvel movies in that way, that it, you know, had to create a new world where other movies didn't. Like it's not a DC thing, like, you know, where you mentioned Marvel movies for the most part are here on Earth in society. It's not Gotham City. It's a normal place that exists. And you know, that was interesting. What else was unique about the movie?
There's sort of like this one flaw that I had with it is like
more than the CGI.
More than that. How does the economics of Wakanda work? Because that was kind of fascinating to me, because like there's like plenty of instances where like they're this really advanced society and they're ahead of the entire world, and then it cuts to like 5 minutes later, Shuri and T'Challa are just like walking in like the streets, which look like, I mean, they kind of look cool, but like they're not these wealthy looking neighborhoods. It's almost looks like the slums
in Oakland, you mean?
So that was no, when they were walking in the streets of Wakanda.
I see what you're saying. So, yeah, they didn't really expand too much into like what vibranium is and what it does, and yeah, that is an interesting point about the hunks of the city.
But I mean, That's probably another nitpick on how things like that work in this world.
Yeah. Well, all right. So I gave you, before we started talking, I gave you just a couple things I wanted you to enlighten me about. I want to talk about sort of trailers, like, as a whole for these Marvel movies and, like, where we're at with these. Because, you know, in that original fight scene where T'Challa was being challenged for the crown in the beginning of the movie, the water, the one that we both really love, you know, I was waiting for Michael B. Jordan to come in that moment, right in the beginning there, because that's what we saw in the trailer. We saw them fighting in this water. So, you know, when we saw M'Baku fight T'Challa, I was pretty pumped. I was like, wow, and now we're going to see this other fight. Like, this is going to be great. And they didn't give it to me. I was like, oh, you're saving it. Like, oh, that's a great move. But, like, are we going to get to a point where the trailers are giving away too much? And, you know, we're getting teaser trailers, we're getting normal trailers. But I guess, like, what does trailers, and not just trailers for this movie, but trailers for upcoming movies and future movies, like, what does that do to stakes in the movie that you're watching today? Like, that's fascinating.
Yeah, for the most part, I think Marvel actually does a pretty good job compared to most other movies. I mean, you look at, like, I mean, I'm going to go back to the past few movies, but you look at, like, Spider-Man Homecoming. They actually saved a lot of, like, the final actions. They left them completely out of the trailers, and they just put most of the beginning action scene movie in the beginning or in the trailer itself. But actually, with Spider-Man, there was kind of too much stuff because that was Sony was in charge of marketing that one and everything. And then this same thing kind of happened with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. They had that one big fight in the beginning of the movie, and they put that and they marketed that with the trailers and everything. But they still saved all that stuff at the end of it with the big fight with the father out of the trailers and in the movie. So, I mean, for the most part, I think they do a good job of it. For me personally, I usually watch, like, the first teaser and one trailer, and then I'm out. I don't want to see any more TV spots because, like, I'm pretty sure I told you before, like, when Star Wars was coming out, there was so many cool scenes that were being revealed in the trailers. And I was just like, I want to save this for the big screen.
Are you ever going to see the real movie? Yeah, exactly. Does it lower the... I'm wondering, though, if it... Does it ever lower the stakes for a character? I mean, to know that T'Challa is going to live, that you know he's going to be in the second movie because you've seen him in the Avengers trailer, like, does that matter to you? Or do you just assume that he's going to live anyway because that's basically how protagonists work?
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. Like, we knew he was going to live because we saw him in Infinity War trailer. But I don't think they make a superhero movie with the character in the main title and he dies at the end. I just don't think that really happened.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, but I think maybe that changes in Avengers. I mean, I already have this theory that I think Iron Man's going to die in this movie, but even though you've given me proof that it probably won't happen based on Robert Downey's Instagram or Jon Favreau's Instagram, but I think that may change and we may not be, we're probably not going to be seeing Robert Downey, in my opinion, in any future trailers after this movie. So I don't know. I just think that the trailer culture is kind of odd now. I mean, we talked about some of those spots that they do. You know, they'll save, like, these big Black Panther trailers for, like, Monday Night Football game, or, like, these big, like, you know, 15 million Nielsen rating shows. Like, those things, they do that for Star Wars too, and, like, these things just have massive audiences, and, like, people will be on YouTube doing breakdowns of trailers, and, you know, the guy that you showed me, you know, Mr. Sunday always does, like, these Easter egg things just on trailers alone, like, not even, I mean...
I love breakdowns of the trailers, I love them.
Yeah, I mean, because those guys like that, just, they know the ins and outs of all these comic books, and, like, they forgot more stuff about, like, these original comic book stories than, like, we'll ever know, but it's just... I don't know, there's just so much to dissect in each one, and I don't know, I'm almost on trailer overdose or overflow or whatever. I'm with you. I try to stay away from it, but it's like, it's impossible not to watch something. Like, I've seen the Avengers trailer, I don't know, at least a dozen times. I mean, I go to the movies and I see it, and, like, there's these things that are online and pictures and stuff. Someone at Comic-Con said this, and, like, there's so much stuff that it's almost like I just don't want to know this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you're preaching to the choir. I agree.
All right. Well, what was the other thing I wanted you to think? Do you remember?
You wanted to talk about the villain's motivations and everything like that.
Oh, right. Yeah. I forget where I heard this, but it makes sense for a lot of movie tropes that a sign for a good villain is to maybe think for at least 1 second that either, like, this guy's right, or, you know, he has actually a good point. Like, there is something to that, and you know, there's something to the randomness of a villain too. Like I, you know, from you know, The Dark Knight, the Joker was not really a pointed person. He just sort of, you know, the famous line, he just wanted to see the world burn. And he, you know, he's just like, he enjoyed the chaos of just creating, you know, craziness in a city. But like, there's something to a character who you think, you know, actually has a point of, you know, his motivation here. I know, you know, Michael B. Jordan in this, his main crime here was that he wanted to help more people. He wanted to spread the technology, and, you know, there were some, you know, bad things about it. Like, you know, he wanted to maybe use the vibranium for weapons, or he wanted to, you know, maybe bring it to too many people and, you know, start a revolution or whatever. But like, his main goal, his main idea was that he wants to help more afflicted people. And like, that's something that you could sort of get behind. And I don't know, it almost made you root for Michael B. Jordan, or like, you weren't mad that he killed him, or that he, you know, sort of beat T'Challa in that duel.
Yeah. So I watched a bunch of like these analyses after movies, and I actually heard something really good. What do you think about this? Where Michael B. Jordan, his character, Malcolm X, and T'Challa's character, Martin Luther King. And it was sort of just like a battle of those ideas.
That's interesting.
So like Malcolm X, I don't know much about him, but I know enough where he was obviously the more violent one. He wanted to bring about change through violence, and Martin Luther King wanted to do it through peace. And it sort of echoes each character kind of perfectly, I thought.
Yeah, and I would say even a better word to use instead of perhaps violence would just be force. Not necessarily violence in that way, but yeah, that's actually an interesting comparison. You know, one other villain that I thought of, and you're just gonna hate this so bad, just because we have to make this about every superhero movie, but the villain in Man of Steel, whose name is escaping me, who's
General Zod,
who he wasn't a great villain, but his main point was to basically more or less burn Earth to the ground and start a new world of people. Of Kryptonian people. And he's trying to get Clark on his team to basically start anew of his own people, his kind. And, you know, they had already been wiped out and there were only few people left. And like, that's sort of like the same thing. You could almost get behind that for a second. Like these people just want to continue their way of life. And, you know, they just saw the Earth as, you know, a vehicle to do that. That's like sort of the thing that we're talking about here, is someone you can get behind.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and I was trying to think back to a bunch of the other Marvel villains, and I couldn't really think of too many other guys who had this like really strong point about what they were doing.
Oh, what I about mean, the only one... your favorite movie, Iron Man 2?
That's not my favorite movie. Iron Man 3 is one of the best.
No, your favorite movie of all time, Iron Man 2. But what's his name from there? Like his ideas and his father's life was stolen. I can't even think of this guy's name, the guy from Russia. His father was killed and his idea was stolen for the Iron Man suit. You can't get by on that? Like that was almost, you know, sort of in the same vein.
Well, that comes down to execution on why that movie wasn't good, but
there's a lot of reasons why that movie was not good.
Yeah, I mean, that could have worked if they did it right, and if it wasn't played by this eccentric character like Mickey Rourke. But I was thinking back, like, the most recent one would probably be Michael Keaton's character in Spider-Man Homecoming, where he was screwed out by this corporatism favoring the Stark company, and he had a great motivation behind him too.
Yeah, that's true.
And the other like I would say probably the best villain in the MCU is Loki, and he doesn't really have that good of a background. Now that I'm thinking of it, he's got this sort of betrayal feeling from his father because he was never told the truth about who he was. But other than that, I mean, there's no real motivation on why he wants to come to Earth in the first Avengers and destroy it, except I guess just straight up revenge, or I don't know.
Well, yeah, conquering. I would think part of his motivation is, I mean, he sort of says it in this moment where he makes everybody bow in the first movie, and you know, he said, you know, you people were meant to be, and look at you without a ruler, you have chaos and you have no leadership, and you know, bad things happen. Like, see that, you know, when all the Avengers are together and they're trying to, you know, formulate a plan, and just, and everything falls apart. And that's what happens when you don't have, you know, someone who's telling you what to do all the time. I think there's a little something there, but even then it's like kind of a stretch.
Yep. So a bunch of people are saying that Killmonger, because of a lot of this, he's probably the best villain in the MCU. What do you think about that?
The best villain in the MCU? I mean, is villain who do you root for most? I don't remember that being the main thing in a villain job script. I mean, I agree that that's an important factor, or it could be an important factor for you to like, sort of get behind them, but I'm not sure that's the number one.
I don't think root for the most is constituting the best villain. Just like who's, I don't know, who's just the best villain?
Who's the best villain? Well, it's not Mickey Rourke. Definitely not Mickey Rourke. Yeah, you know what?
I think I go with Loki, honestly.
Yeah, I don't see how it's not Loki. You might be able to talk me into Michael B. Jordan being two.
Yeah. See, I actually had a gripe about him. I thought his performance was pretty great, but there was definitely times where it was hit or miss for me. Like, people talk about like the throne room a lot on how that was a really great scene. But to me, it was like, it seemed like a lot of the times he was sort of playing up his character. And like, I just think about like him just like saying like, I'm here to take the throne. Like it was kind of like, it was odd the way he was speaking sometimes.
It was, yeah, almost a little musically, right? I mean, he was like so matter of fact about stuff.
Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely theatrical. Part of it was interesting because, you know, you sort of just put this guy from Oakland in like this very high class African room with all these, you know, proper people. And he just, you know, he's talking in a much different way than, you know, everybody else is. You know, they show that one scene where he has the ring and he's like, you know, I'm a right for king. And Michael B. Jordan comes up from the side. He's like, what's up, auntie? Like, it's just like, it's like this moment where, you know, like the cultures collide. And I thought that was interesting. Maybe it was a little too over the top, but I think it would have been weird if it wasn't at least a little. Here's an annoying thing that I hate that we have to do, but we just have to do it because there's so many movies in this universe. Is it like, as soon as we're walking out of theater, oh, it was good, but it's not as good as Civil War, or it's not as good as Thor. Like, I hate to do that all the time, but like, it's just something that we do. You know, we walked out of a Star Wars movie, like, oh, okay, well, this is the fifth best Star Wars movie. Or like, you know, it's something that it's so annoying that we have to do, but I can't help but do it.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, with Star Wars, it's a little bit more excusable on why we rank them, because it's supposedly this one continuous line of people that are connected like by familial blood. But like with Marvel, it's kind of different because like now it's getting to a point where these movies are like different movies. Like this was not a comedy movie.
This was a throwback. This was more like I don't know, like an original not Civil War. This is like an old Captain America movie, way more than like if you watch Thor Ragnarok and then this movie, like two completely different movies. That. Like that's not like this was more of a throwback than anything. This wasn't a continuation.
Yeah, yeah. How do you even rank that? Like Thor Ragnarok compared to this? Like I came out of Thor Ragnarok with the biggest smirk on my face and I couldn't stop laughing and thinking about the jokes. This movie, I'm trying to think about all these dramatic moments that happen in the movie with the characters and development and everything like that. So it's hard to really compare.
Because it's hard to compare because they're so different and they're not trying to be the same as the thing. Like this. I think because it was crafting a new world and, you know, this movie needed to be a little bit longer and introducing a lot of people, it didn't really have the time to afford comedy. You know, like we already know Thor so much. We've seen him in, you know, four fucking movies at this point. We don't need to know his story or whatever's happening. So, you know, we're able to just sit with Thor in chains for 4 minutes and just like have him just make funny riffs like that. We have the time. We have the time to do that. But with Black Panther, we just, you know, we needed all 2 hours and 20 minutes to, like, tell what the heck is going on here.
Yeah, and even though I didn't think this was, like, a fantastic movie, I still love the fact that Marvel has gotten to this place where they can throw a bunch of money at this movie. They can throw a bunch of money at a buddy cop Thor movie. They can throw a bunch of money at another Ant-Man movie coming up and do all these crazy little things and just see whatever works. And it's really cool because, like, you're not really – the argument of, like, all Marvel movies are the same is getting really stale to me. And these are perfect examples of
it. Yeah. I mean, you could be – yeah, watch Thor Ragnarok and then watch this movie. And then, like, you could say, you know, man, how are they going to do a movie where a guy's superpower is to be an ant? Like, I remember hearing about that, you know, 4 years ago and be like, what? Like, how is this going to be interesting? And like somehow they did it. And, you know, with these, you know, DENF, you know, superheroes, like we mentioned with Guardians, like how are they going to do that? And, you know, they have more stuff coming down the pike. Like this movie was, I think, pretty different from the other movies in the fact that, you know, it was able to build this world and it was sort of to be just overall cinematically way different in, you know, in character and, you know, in plot. Like, this is a different type of movie, and you couldn't mistake it for, you know, Iron Man 1, or you couldn't mistake it with, you know, a quippy Spider-Man. Like, we're going to get to a point where, I mean, I don't know how crazy they're going to get with some of the stuff. Like, what is there another MCU movie that's, like, we're not really sure about that's coming down in the future that, like, oh, this, like, I'm not worried about Ant-Man and the Wasp, but, like, is there something that's coming way down the future that we're actually going to start seeing, like, Marvel, I think we maybe need to reel it in?
I really don't think so. I mean, the only movie coming up that is going to be really big for Marvel, well, they're all big, but big culturally, would be probably the Captain Marvel movie, because it's going to be the first woman Marvel movie that they have. So that's going to be interesting. But, I mean, I don't know about, like, things to worry about, really. It seemed like they got it pretty much under wraps.
All right, you want to talk a little post-credit?
Yeah, not too much to talk about here, though.
I know. Well, I have some issues with just, like, the overall, you know, lineage that they're going for with Bucky. I mean, that's the thing.
Well, let me ask you this.
All right, go ahead.
When you go into these, do you know what you want to get out of the post-credit scenes? Because every time I walk in, I'm like, all right, at least give me a glimpse at Bucky here. Because that's all I thought about when...
You wanted Bucky.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, see, I'm ready for basically anything. That world. Here's the beef is though. I don't care about Bucky. I really don't care that much about him. They haven't established him enough where I feel bad for him, or I really want him to step into, you know, Rogers's role. I'm not even sure that this guy is, you know, either a great actor, but at this point, I definitely don't care about his character.
Really? I mean, they've had two movies about him where he's pretty much part of the main crew. So
throughout Civil War, were you in any way rooting for Captain America?
I mean, yeah, you had Cap, Bucky, and Falcon. They were all great together.
Yeah, but they were all right. They were okay together, but he's not the good guy. Like, I don't know, how could you go away from that movie and be like, you know what, Iron Man, like that, his, you know, his parents were killed. I mean, that's, you know, I'm definitely not on Bucky's side. I don't think they've, so there's this thing in movies and in cinema that, you know, you have to have what they call a save the cat moment, where earlier on in a character's lineage, you have to have them essentially save a cat from a tree, or you have to do something that makes you either A, feel compassionate or connected or something about a character or
yeah,
a guy.
Like virtuous. Yeah, I get you.
And I'm not sure he's had that moment. And I think it's possibly too late for him to just have the moment after he's, you know, like you said, been in three movies already. I'm not sure I'm in for him being the new Captain America. And I think I'm going to be disappointed because that's basically what we're headed for, right?
Well, I think a lot of that too is a lot of just speculation and hype on him picking up the Captain America mantle, because we really just don't know what's going to happen to Cap, because behind the scenes, the contracts and everything like that, we just don't know. But I would say the Infinity War movie coming up is probably a good time for him to have, like, maybe one of those moments, because it's going to be the first time where he's not going to be brainwashed, because supposedly that's why he came to Wakanda in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, and that's where we are for our next movie, aren't we? We're in Wakanda. So
which will be interesting in and of itself.
Who's in charge? Who's in charge of Avengers?
The Russo brothers, guys who did the Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Okay, we're in good hands then.
And some episodes of Arrested Development.
All right, so we're gonna be in for some quippy action. I like it. So it's gonna be good. So all right, so that was Bucky being in Wakanda. That was one of the post credits. What was the other one?
That was the post credits. The first post credit scene was just the T'Challa addressing, I guess it was probably like the United Nations, telling them he's ready to open up his borders, and he had that nice monologue about we want to build, or I don't know,
bridges, like bridges, yeah, not walls.
We want to build bridges, not walls. So we all know what that means.
You know, in the moment, I didn't make that connection. I'm not sure it's what people think it is. It could be. I'm not sure. I'm not ready to make that statement.
I mean, When I heard it, I definitely was like, "Yep, that's what it is. I know what he's talking about there."
Well, it's not like that's the first time that idiom has been mentioned. It didn't just happen in, you know, in the last 2 years. So in their defense, I'm not saying it is or it's not, or I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying it's not the first time someone said that.
Yeah, and like, I mean, it's nice because like they go throughout the whole movie being this segregated society, or what, choosing to be this segregated society. And them realizing that you got to be, to be really like truly prosperous, you need to open up and you need to connect with individual cultures, because that's actually how how cultures thrive is through connection through other cultures.
All right. Well, this was good. I mean, we've gone for, you know, about 45 minutes here. I'm losing this room for, you know, for the night. So first,
let me ask you one last
thing. All right. Make it quick.
What did you think about the what are those Vine jokes?
Oh, so forced. It was the
comedy was not great in this movie.
No,
only Claw really was good.
No, I'm not sure. I think that most of their jokes hit. I think there weren't many, actually. I mean, we'd said this a bunch of times, but there weren't that many jokes. But I think the ones that they did were usually pretty good. I think you know, Suri was funny. You know, in the beginning when they asked him if he froze, like that was great.
Yeah.
And they just sort of, you know, did the classic, you know, silent smirk. And, you know, that I think that stuff worked for the most part.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
It was funny, but it wasn't trying to be quippy. You know, it wasn't trying to be Spider-Man. It was trying to be, I don't really know what it was trying to be, but it was trying to be something different. It was trying to be something different, and it worked.
Yeah.
I don't want to put a number or anything on it. I went into the movie theater, and I came out, and I was like, that was good. That's all it is. It was a good movie. I don't want to rank it in terms of the 18 other movies or whatever. Like, that was a fun movie and it was different, and that's about it.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to seeing it again when it comes out to digital. That'll definitely be a good movie to rewatch.
Yeah. All right. So any parting shots? Any parting words?
No, not really. I mean, if you want, can I plug myself on Twitter?
Oh yeah, yeah. Plug everything. You get the bump, the PC bump.
Oh well, I mean, I have a very, I guess, certain taste in Twitter, so you can follow me at Twitter. I'm at @Gage_Blazy, @Gage_BLASI.
Oh, so you couldn't get @Gage Blazy, huh?
No, even though I was pretty early at the Twitter game, I couldn't get @Gage Blazy.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think I have basically my name and everything. Twitter, yeah. Instagram. I wasn't able to get it in Gmail. That was unfortunate. But most things I have my name, just because me and you both have such unique names. But all right, this was good. I mean, we went for a pretty long time. I think we covered most of it. I mean, we probably could go for another 30 minutes or so, but
yeah,
no one wants to listen to that long of a podcast, let's be honest. All right, so @Gage_Blazy, @WestonBlazy, because I was able to get my name. And this was good, Gage. This is the first time that you've been on here, and maybe we'll do another one after a great Han Solo movie that's just gonna blow everyone's doors off.
Oh my god.
It's not gonna be good at all.
Yeah, maybe like a hilarious, wow, I can't believe this is a movie kind of review.
I can't believe what Disney is doing kind of. Alright, well, Gage, this was good. I'll chat with you again soon.
Alright, see ya.